if your teacher wrote something on the board and your kid could read it, then your kid comes home and they say, "Hey, Dad, I learned to read something today." And we'll say, "What did you learn to read?" And they said, "I learned, you know, hop on pop." I'm like, "Oh, cool. Well," and then you write down hop on pop, and they look at it and it's like, "I can't read that." Why not? Well, I read it because my, you know, we wouldn't say that. You wrote hop on pop too. But if that were, you know, a machine, the machine would have to be trained on all the different ways that different people could write it before it could read it most of the time.
3, 2, 1.
Welcome to another episode of Nerding Out with That Nerdy Catholic. I'm Seth Payne, and I'm here with my ever co-nerd, Cesar. Say hi, Cesar.
Hello, how are you guys?
So, you might see, if you're watching this on YouTube, that we are just two voices with some shots of our faces, and you're not seeing our video. If you're listening on the podcast, you're not going to notice anything different, but I just want to let you know that we are, for now, doing audio-only podcasts. We're still going to be posting it to YouTube, but we're only going to be doing audio. My brother Cesar had to move back to his home country of Peru, and so now we are recording remotely with each other because of his connection to the internet there and our having to do a transcontinental call. We are going to be doing audio only for the foreseeable future. And also because of that, it's been a complicated transition for him. And with things at my job, things have been complicated the last few months. So I want to apologize for the delay on getting these episodes out. But we are here. We're here and we are back talking about artificial intelligence. And before we jump into it, I just want to remind you, if you head over to thatnerdycatholic.com, you can sign up for our email list and get updates when we put out new content. And if there are any questions we have for you, we would love to hear your input. And getting on our email list is the quickest way to see what is going on. If you head over to thatnerdycatholic.com/merch, you can get t-shirts and mugs and some cool nerdy swag over there. And if you head over to thatnerdycatholic.com/support, you can support us financially. We are thankful for any help that you can give. We are also thankful for your prayers and your good thoughts sent our way. But that is the end of that introduction. And so now to our topic. So we have put out two episodes that we have just done about AI and what is it. And we go into really a high level discussion of artificial intelligence. And we talk about, you know, the mechanisms, the neural networks behind it, the history of artificial intelligence, and how it is, how it's math. You know, in a simple summary of artificial intelligence, it is math. And so what we want to talk about today, before we go into some of the more deeper discussions on artificial intelligence, is we want to talk about the language that is used for artificial intelligence. And so Cesar and I have come up with a list of a few words that I'm sure you've heard a lot in the past few months in news reports, social media posts about or videos about artificial intelligence. And they might have come to seem almost expected, and you don't really think twice about what they mean. Right, Cesar?
That's correct. And that's very important introduction, because the way we express ourselves is the way we see the world. No? So words are very important and has a meaning. No? I would like to start with, you know, back in the days when I was in college, I was in my first year, I remember, and there was a teacher of a language teacher, no? And he mentioned the only thing that I remember from that semester from language is the definition of Cossario, Eugene Cossario, the way he defined language. And he said, language is defined as the apprehension of the being. No? And that definition strikes me because it's not like anything that I heard before, no? Language is the tool for communication. Language is the way that humans communicate. Language is the way that someone expresses something to the other person. No.
Yeah.
Coursera's definition struck me because it was different. It's the apprehension of the being, no?
I remember when I was living in Peru and I was working with a language tutor to help me, you know, help me learn Spanish and how to speak Spanish better. And I remember the moment when I got to the point where I could speak Spanish pretty well, but I realized that different languages express ideas in very different ways. And I had a deeper understanding of what I was thinking when I could get to the point where I could think it in two different languages, right? I mean, have you had that experience?
Definitely, yes. And it's the way that you say one thing in English, not because of, you know, the translation from the symmetrical translation word to word, but you can understand the context from the mind of, in my case, from the mind of the people that lives in the USA, that is the different worldview from Peru, which is where I came from and which is where I'm right now, no? So it strikes me because this definition implies that the language or the words that you use to speak will determine what the way you see the world and also the way you think and also the way you form your opinions. So furthermore, it also implies that will define the way you act, no? Mm-hmm. So it's more like just a tool for communication. It's the way your worldview is your language, no?
Yeah, and the more you know someone, when you're communicating with them, the more you know them. Yeah. And if I know who you are, Cesar, if I know you really well, and you tell me something, I'm going to hear that a lot differently than if a complete stranger said the same exact thing to me, right?
That's correct.
So it really is a sharing of yourself. It's not just a passing on information, but it's really a sharing of yourself. If I'm speaking to you, we use the phrase speaking from the heart. So that language that I'm using is not just information, it's actually part of me.
I totally agree with you.
And so thinking about this idea then of artificial intelligence, we wanted to look at these words. Before we go into these words, I wanted to read a quote. I found this page on the IBM website. I'll put the URL in the show notes, but it has some really good summaries of the different aspects of artificial intelligence, neural networks, the large language model. And so it's an interesting site to read through to kind of learn the basics of artificial intelligence. But on one of the main pages, there's this quote that I want to read. It says, "Artificial intelligence is technology that enables computers and machines to simulate human learning, comprehension, problem solving, decision making, creativity, and autonomy." And I think that's going to be the two words there that are going to be kind of at the basis of our conversation tonight is simulate and automation.
Yeah.
And so if you call it intelligence, now, one of the things that I've been thinking about as I've been looking through the script for this episode, Cesar, is in order to understand what intelligence is, you have to understand what a person is, right? And so with our understanding, you're in my understanding of what a person is, you know, we have a body, we have a mind, but we also have a soul. And so there is any aspect of thought has to include some level of spirituality. But if you have an understanding of the person as just a body with a brain, then I think it's easier to see a computer as intelligent. If you know, I've heard a number of different places where people will say something along the lines of, well, you know, our brain is just a biological computer, right?
Yeah.
And so if you're thinking about artificial intelligence and you're thinking from that worldview, well, then what's the difference between silicon computer or carbon-based biological computer?
That's a very good question, no? And we have to remember, and this is whoever studied computers or programming, or everybody knows that the computer has to execute some code or some instructions in order to do something. No? The main difference is, in a computer, somebody put that instructions, that set of codes, in your in the chips, no, in the memory or in the hard disk or whatever you put it. No, in a human being, nobody put that. I mean, nobody physically. No, if you believe in God, you have faith. You know that God created us. No, but the intelligent part, is not just the matter. It's not just the transistors. It's not just the NPM transistor, the chips, or whatever is in a computer, or the similar in a human brain. No, it goes beyond that. No,
yeah.
And that's why I want to quote here Saint Augustine, that says, you know, there are three intrinsic faculties to the human beings. No, memory, the understanding or intelligence, and the will. Mm-hmm. No, so those three things are unique to human beings, unlike to any other computer. No, any other computer may have memory, may have and I like your IBM definition here, the simulation of intelligence, and for sure it doesn't have a will.
Right,
no,
right.
Because the purpose
and you can compare it to an animal.
Yeah.
An animal has a memory. An animal has some level of intelligence.
Yeah.
But it uses that memory and intelligence to act on instinct.
Yes.
You know, our will allows us to act against our instinct.
Yes.
You know, it's our will that says, if I really want to do something, but if I know that that's something that would be wrong, then I can try and form my conscience, which is part of my will, to say, you know, I'm not going to do that. Like saying, you know, fasting. You know, if you're an animal will see food and it's like, well, I need to eat food to survive, so I'm going to eat the food. I can use my will to say, whether for health reasons or spiritual reasons, you know, I'm going to take some time and I'm going to restrain from eating food for some greater good.
Yes, completely agree. So that's the biggest thing that differentiate us, no? And that is why the other thing that I want to highlight here is that we as a human are the only beings, unlike a computer, capable of having a purpose and drawing their life energy for a purpose. I know that right now, you know, there are a lot of human beings that live purposelessly, you know? But
yeah.
I mean, that's why we said we are capable of having and pursuing a higher purpose. No,
yeah.
Not everybody does it. Not some people may select to live a pleasure life, but do not pursue any higher purpose in their life. But we are capable to do that. No,
right. Well, and it's not easy always.
It is not
to
easy.
Find, you know, to try to live for a higher purpose, but
exactly
it does not. And as you say, if someone does not do that, it doesn't mean that they're not capable of it.
Yes, exactly. Everybody's capable of that, no? So we use our memory to remember who we are and what is our purpose, no? We can apprehend the purpose because we have a will, no? We make that purpose our mainline purpose because we have a will, no? And we are capable of exercising our will, no?
Yeah, and I think why we're doing this, I mean, why we're doing this whole series, not even just this series, but why we're doing these, you know, these podcasts, is because we want people to understand that, you know, each one of us, as you said, each one of us has a purpose for our life.
Yes.
And each one of us is called to live out that purpose. And, you know, if you think that, you know, my life doesn't have any meaning. You know, I think one of the big issues in our day to day is that people live without a sense of purpose or meaning. And, you know, there's so much anxiety in the world today. And I think a part of it is because people have lost that sense of, of purpose or meaning for their own life.
That's true. That is sad, but it's true. Many people right now live without a sense of or pursue a purpose, a higher purpose in their for their life, no? And this can only be done by human beings, no? Any other machine, even with AI, has been given a purpose by a human being. This is a useful tool in order to accomplish something, but that something has not been determined by the AI. It has been determined by the human being, the purpose of any other machine. So no machine can do that. No machine can have a will. No machine can pursue a purpose. It is given as an set of instruction for the machine.
So intelligence is the broad capacity to learn, understand, reason, solve problems, and adapt to new situations, involving skills like abstract thinking, creativity, logic, and self-awareness. So I think about a kid. When you see a small child, you know, 9 months, 12 months old, and they are sitting on the floor with their toys, they're figuring out how these things work. You know, I think about that, the toy that we have, a box that has different shaped holes in it. And they have different shaped blocks, and they're picking up the blocks and they're trying to stick it in. You might have to, you know, show them a few times. You know, you pick up a block and put it in, and pick up a block and put it where it doesn't fit. But then you just stand back and you see the kid playing with it and learning. You compare that to an artificial intelligence, and we're going to go into some of these words in a second, but, you know, learning and training. The kid is just figuring it on their own. You know, that is them exercising their intelligence.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, agree. Yeah. And that is a very important thing, no? Because in the fact that the kid is exercising their intelligence, is using one of the parts, which is recognizing the pattern in order to build something, no?
Mm-hmm.
And that is what I like your definition of IBM. The AI can simulate that, because it's a very good tool for pattern recognition, you know?
Yep.
But we are missing the whole other broad scope from what we say intelligence is, no?
Yeah.
And that is a very important distinction, no? That is a very important distinction from somebody being intelligent and a very sophisticated computer that has automation capabilities in order to do something.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Let's jump into the first word that we're going to be talking about, and that's learning. So deep learning. So deep learning is one of the ways that an artificial intelligence can learn and can be trained in. Deep learning is a subset of machine learning, which is kind of the broader, you know, category of how we train artificial intelligence, that uses multi-layered neural networks called deep neural networks. And we had talked about what a neural network is in the last two episodes. They more closely simulate the complex decision-making power of the human brain. So here's another quote from the IBM website. Deep neural networks include an input layer, at least three, but usually hundreds of hidden layers, and an output layer. Unlike neural networks used in classical machine learning models, which usually have only one or two hidden layers. So, you know, go back to the picture that we looked at last time of a neural network with all these hidden layers. And each layer is made of any number of nodes, usually hundreds or thousands. And each node is a simple mathematical formula. So we have this idea of learning. So explain to us the process of an artificial intelligence learning versus in supervised and deep learning.
Thank you very much for that. I think that the main thing here is that, for example, let's take the supervised learning first, no?
Mm-hmm.
You present the machine some examples with some label in order to train that neural network. And I think the process of training is giving the machine some examples and saying how big or small was the error to the final goal that you want for them, no? So in that process, you see that besides the machine, someone else has to guide the machine on that learning process. No?
Yeah.
So that's the thing of supervised learning. No? In other words, although you are not making the actual program on the machine, because the neural network, you don't program a neural network per se, as in a traditional way, you are making the values of each node to the parameter that best fit to the output that you want the machine to recognize. No.
Right. And the important part of this is the fact that you have to start with a large number of labeled examples to train. You need to have the examples to say, you know, like we talked about with how to see a handwritten number.
Yes.
You have to have thousands of examples of an image of a handwritten number, and you have to label it and say, this is a 3, this is a 5. Yeah. And so training the model over and over and over again until it gets accurate enough to be able to say, you know, 97, 98% of the time, this is a 3 or this is a 5, and get it correct.
Yeah, yeah. This is not like the children that you, for example, when they are in preschool and the teacher put the number 3 and they learn to recognize the number 3, your handwriting is different from the teacher. But they can also recognize that. And even if you put the number 3 in a different angle, they can recognize that. No? So our kids doesn't need, and this is a very important distinction, doesn't need a large number of labeled data in order to start quote-unquote learning.
Right. Well, yeah. And if that were the case, if your teacher wrote something on the board and your kid could read it, then your kid comes home and they say, hey, Dad, I learned to read something today. And they will say, what did you learn to read? And they said, I learned, you know, hop on pop. I'm like, oh, cool. Well, and then you write down hop on pop and they look at it and it's like, I can't read that. Why not? Well, I read it because my, you know, we wouldn't say that. You wrote hop on pop too. But if that were, you know, a machine, the machine would have to be trained on all the different ways that different people could write it before it could read it most of the time.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So we are putting on the distinctions here, no? There is also deep and supervised learning. And this is very important distinction here, no? Because in this case, the data sets are not labeled. The examples that are presented to the machine are not labeled. But in this case, we use the machine in order to help us recognize some patterns. But the final person that makes the decision of what patterns are somehow useful or not useful, or, you know, goes towards a goal that we want to accomplish, is at the end a human being, no? And again, even though the deep learning is with unsupervised learning, because you will see some person that says, no, but there's the AI also learns in an unsupervised learning. That means that it's more closely like a person. No. In that case, the purpose of an unsupervised learning is to use the machine in order to recognize patterns instead of a person trying to look for patterns in a large set of samples, no? So we are using a machine to help us, but the final being that say this pattern is the one that is useful, or this is more closely that we are looking for something, is at the end a human being. No. So
So looking at this, you know, looking comparing these two, supervised versus deep learning. Supervised is training a model on a whole bunch of labeled items so that the model can then look at something and determine what it is. Deep learning uses an unsupervised model that looks at a whole bunch of unlabeled items, and they can find things that are similar between all of them, but they can't tell you what's a cat, you know, what's a tree. And, you know, as we've said before, this is why we have the CAPTCHA tool. One of the things it is used for is, you know, when you're trying to show that you're not a robot and you say, oh, there's a bike, there's a bike, there's a bike, and there's a bike. We're making that labeled data set to do the supervised training so that, you know, some model out there can say, oh, this is what a bike is.
Oh, yeah. and we are being used in that case to learn and, you know, cloud AI how to recognize a bike there.
Right, right. Yeah. So, thinking about then this idea that a computer is learning, the field of artificial intelligence started, as it's, you know, in that first quote, to simulate intelligence. Now, I know that there's always been this idea and we talked about a few episodes ago, we have these images of robots, in R2-D2 and C-3PO, that they're machines and yet have personalities. And so we kind of anthropomorphize these robots, and now things like ChatGPT, when we're talking to them, we assume that they're learning just like us. But I think one of the things in this is that when an AI model is being trained, it is just going through a number of comparisons and trying to minimize an error function. It's trying to find values within all of these, each node with the mathematical formula in that node. They're trying to do all these calculations to minimize an error function so that they can find patterns. And so this is where it goes back to, automation versus intelligence, is that we are creating these tools that will help automate tasks. And they're great tools, and the level of automation that can be done in them is far superior than what we could have done 10, 20 years ago. But it is still this more of a level of automation than actual intelligence.
That's right. And there is the to go back to the topic of our audio today, is the word learning. We put learning just to make people think that the AI is equal to a human being. But, after this conversation, we see the great difference between how human learns and how, quote unquote, machine learns, which is basically trying to raise on pattern recognition and try to guide in order to have some results or to trying to have unsupervised deep learning in order to help us recognize pattern in a big set of samples. No? But it's, at the end, it's pattern recognition. But if we put pattern recognition, it won't sell. But if we put learn, that machine can learn, And that's why you said it correctly. We have been for the last 50 years with those robots that are humanoids and can understand and interact with us, that I feel that sometimes human beings longs for robots to do that with them. So we kind of think that they are learning, but we have to say what it is, and that's why we are doing this video right now.
Yeah. The next word I want to talk about is the word decide. And I think this is even deeper than learning, where learning, you could just say learning is a way of developing, greater information about a system. So you think about, when you're talking about learning, you talk about going to school and, learning math. Okay, now I understand these mathematical concepts better. I understand more about history. And so I think it's easy sometimes to think of learning just as memorization. And when you think about learning as memorization, you think, why can't a machine learn just as well as I can? Because if I'm memorizing facts and I'm able to, regurgitate them, write them down on a test, well, then why can't a machine do the same thing? But when we go to the next word, to decide, that goes from the idea of intelligence to the will. So when we decide between two or more options, that choosing could be done according to what you like the most. You could choose to do something towards a goal, or you could choose something because you were told to do it. You could choose something because someone told you to do the opposite. I mean, there are so many different reasons why people decide to do one thing or another, right?
So in any case, when we talk about choosing in a human will, is the free exercise of your will. Basically, no? But when we talk about when a machine decides, no? And the word is key, because the word decide is there, in my view, to make the machine be more human. But the fact is, when a machine decides, it's always towards a target program, and that target is set by a human being, no?
Mm-hmm.
And that is true whether we talk about classical computing or even AI, no?
Yeah.
That is why, you know, we have the illusion the AI is choosing something, no? Or is in a choosing process, no? That's why I like the other episode prior to this. We see that in the end, all the decisions are mathematical formula in order to minimize some error function to get mm-hmm. the final goal, no? But yeah. because that mathematical complexity and all the operations is just in a black box, we cannot see that with our eyes, then we think we have the illusion that the machine is deciding something. No?
Mm-hmm.
So right. that's what we want to point out here.
Well, and I think back to what we were talking about before, I think the type of decision that an AI model can make could be more closely compared to an animal going off instinct.
Mm-hmm.
When you train an AI model, you're training it on a whole bunch of data, and then you say, okay, now go out and act on what you've been trained on. And it can look at something, or you know, you think about, you know, ChatGPT when you're chatting with it. It can read the words that you're typing in, and then it, based on its calculations, it can say, okay, well, what is the best word to output? But it is basically going off of this large data set that it's looking at and saying, okay, well, let me just figure out the best thing to put out. If I ask ChatGPT a question, it's not sitting there in the background saying, huh, here's a question this person is asking. Do they want a literal answer? Are they looking for something deeper? Or are they being emotional? And so I actually need to just support them. You know, when I ask you a question, you hear what I'm saying, you hear my tone, you know who I am, and you say, oh, Seth just asked me a question, but I don't think he actually wants the answer to that. I think he's actually just struggling with something, mm-hmm. right?
Yep, yep.
And so you can decide how you respond to me.
No, that's exactly right. And that's human, only human behavior, only humans can do that, no? LLM, large language model, can emulate that, no? During this process of learning, and there's the process of inference. Now, the mm-hmm. process of inference is when we use the AI. For example, when we use ChatGPT yeah. and start asking questions from them, no, we think the ChatGPT is answering us, thinking and deciding their words, and we already know that they are giving the word on a large language model that has been priorly training, and it's interacting with us with that huge background of training, but that's it. No,
yeah.
In that way, even though it's not a hard-coded programming answer, it has been programmed in some way when mm-hmm. it was going through the process of learning the large language model or the AI.
Yeah, you know? through all of its training,
yes,
it is given weights to different responses. So if you type certain words, there are all of these trained weights inside the model that says, okay, if you see these words, here are the words that are weighted as more likely that you should respond with.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
I've heard a number of stories where people are starting to treat programs like ChatGPT like they're people. And yes. It's sad when you hear people interacting with ChatGPT or Grok or any of the other AI models. And because the words that they're seeing come back to them sound like they're words that are being typed by a person, then people are treating it as if they're actually getting advice from a person and not these automated responses. And
that's
so they
true.
Can put
and,
too much emotional weight on them.
Yeah, that's true. I would rather knock the door of my neighbor and say, hey, I would like you to invite to dinner this time and have a conversation. And that's truly a nice conversation instead of relying on an AI, which is a machine. People forget sometimes that AI is at the end a machine.
Right.
It's a machine.
Right.
It has no emotion, no sense of being, and shouldn't be treated like another person. No? It's much better to knock the door on your neighbor and try to know that person. Who knows? maybe there's a new friend there, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think in general, that's good advice. You know, where we live right now, when we moved into the house we lived in, we've been here for about 10 years. And when we first moved here, we didn't really know many of our neighbors and, you know, people were at work a lot. But in the past few years, we've gotten to know some of our neighbors. It is nice to have someone that's right there, or, you know, yeah, the men's group that we've been in,
yep,
to have other people that you can go to. And I know that we are currently going through an epidemic of loneliness. And
yes,
I think there are too many people that are disconnected from other people. So I think it's important. Each one of us should go out and make connections with other people and not treat machines like they're people.
Yeah,
because we're not
right.
going to get the same kind of relationship and fulfillment from a machine that you get from another person.
Definitely, definitely, no? And we are reading in another words that AI has a lot, which is training, no?
Mm-hmm.
There was a process that is called, so for the guys that are into computer science, they may recognize the process of retrieval augmented generation, or RAG, no? Which is, you have an AI model, no? And your own version of Olama number 3 or whatever number, no? And you want to that AI model to be specialized in, I don't know, in programming or in medical field. So you can teach that model how to answer to questions around medical fields or programming or science in general, no? So, mm-hmm. And that is a process that is retrieval augmented generation. And it involves that the model goes against through a process with a lot of video cards in order to, you know, teach more or specialize the large language model into what you want them to specialize in an answer. No? So in that way, the LLM or the AI is acquiring new knowledge. No? And if we remember since 2017, we got the transformer model that was a very good invention from Google. No? Whatever you gave as the initial prompt to the model as a context, is new information that the AI can elaborate into. No? The issue is that information, that context is always limited. No? So that's mm-hmm. why when you have a long conversation with an AI, if it's really long, it tends to forget the initial parts of the conversation, or sometimes it starts to hallucinate, giving you answers that doesn't make any sense. If you are not aware that is you are not talking to a human being, you may think that answers are true, but it's part
right.
of an hallucination, no? And hallucination right. is just the AI start to spit words that doesn't make any sense. But how do we know
right.
it doesn't make any sense? Because we are human beings, no?
Right, and we can see that does not match with what I understand of the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a few months ago, I learned that when you're having a conversation with ChatGPT, it's sending the entire conversation back every single time and not just the latest thing that you've typed. When you're having a conversation with someone, people have a memory of what they've said, of what you've said. And so you can assume that they are gaining a context for the conversation that you're having. And if you say something that's brand new, if you're in the same conversation, then, you know, they might need you to explain it, you know, better, but they can say, oh, okay, well, let me see, what does that mean in context of everything that you've said so far? Where in this, you know, ChatGPT or any other AI model, whenever you're typing something, they're sending the entire thing back every time, and it's trying to read and reassess every single time the entire conversation. And so it might sound like at one point the model understands what you're talking about, but if you start saying something else, it might just assume now this is a completely different conversation and start giving you back something that's like, wait, don't, but that's not what you said before, and that's not what I said before,
yep,
because it's not really a conversation.
And you know, I remember right now that I read this in an article like 1 month before, and they say that, you know, a large number of programmers has been laid out because, you know, some of the programming is led to the AI, you know. Then the problem is that some companies are starting to rehire programmers because, of course, AI is a tool that can program, but who knows if the AI is putting the correct code or not.
Right, right.
Only an expert programmer can know, oh, the AI is wrong. But if you think that the AI never will go wrong and you just lay off a lot of programmers, then you have a problem that your software is with a lot of bugs and nobody detects that. And you know, the AI, as we see, hallucinates and can put code that can be perfectly syntactic but doesn't make any sense at all, or introduces a lot of bugs into the software. No? So I read that some companies are rehiring because, you know, executives say, oh, we have the AI, they can code, so let's get rid of a lot of people. And, you know, that's not the case. And that's a very bad understanding of AI having the capacity of replacing a human being. I think the AI is a very good tool to enhance human being capabilities, but not to replace it. Definitely not.
Right. And you think about some of the early uses of AI in, you know, lawyers who were, who had to comb through, you know, hundreds of pages of phone conversations. You can have a program. I mean, you could have it whether it's AI or not, but you can have an AI model comb through all these phone calls and find all the patterns. But you can't have an AI model say, oh, look at all these patterns. It must, you know, this person seems suspicious. You need a person that's looking at what the AI has done and say, oh, okay, well, I see these patterns. These are innocuous. There's no reason to keep looking at these patterns. These patterns over here, these are actually suspicious, and we need to dig deeper into this. And where this is where you can see the strength of something like an AI model. An AI model can go through hundreds of pages of transcripts of phone calls in an hour that would take, you know, weeks for a person to go through, or a day for, you know, a dozen people to go through. But you need the people there to then put meaning to what these patterns are.
Totally correct. Yes, I totally agree with you, my brother.
We have one last word we want to talk about, and this is something that I have used a bit with artificial intelligence, and I think a lot of people are using this now, especially when it comes to images and video. We all have seen now many examples on different social media platforms. I'm thinking like on Facebook. You know, I can't get on Facebook without seeing at least half of the short reel videos are AI generated. And so AI has been generating images, text, music, videos. And so we think of this idea of AI generating something and think, oh, look what AI is creating. And I think that's a good comparison. Generate versus create. Because AI definitely generates a lot of things.
Yeah.
But does AI create anything?
Yeah. No, it's a very good thing that you put it on the table, because AI can generate always based on the information that the model has been provided to. But I think the human soul is capable of, you know, doing a nice work of art, creating a nice work of art. No? And I hope in a future episode we have this conversation with artists and creators and see how AI is so different than a human creation. A musician, a painter, or something like that. No, AI can put some, you know, grab from different pieces and generate something, but to create something, it's a God-given gift to only human.
Well, I think about, you know, where it says in Genesis, God created them, male and female created them in His image.
Yes,
He created them, and part of that being created in the image of God is for us to actually share in this task of creation.
Yeah.
As you're saying, like, you know, artists creating these works of art, and you can create a work of art that is very similar to someone else, but you look at the history of art or the history of music, and you have so many periods where someone tries something completely new.
Yes.
And they might be getting some ideas from what's come before them. You know, like as you said before, when we were talking, you know, in math and in science, that, you know, we stand on the shoulders of giants. Yes. We're always learning from the people that came before us. I mean, even thinking in the field of math and science, I remember when we were talking about, I'm trying to remember his name, Eurythices, the first Greek to propose that the world was round.
Oh, yes.
Everyone at the time knew, quote, knew that the world was flat.
Yeah.
And so if you think about that from an AI model situation, all the information out there was that the world was flat.
Yeah.
So here comes someone and says, wait a second, something doesn't quite make sense. Let me propose that the world is round. An AI model would look at all the information out there and say, oh, yeah, the world is flat. AI model wouldn't say, oh, wait a second, let me think about this some more. Maybe, what if the world was round? You know, if there was AI back in ancient Greece.
In that times, yes.
It wouldn't happen, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree with you. The generating process at the end, it's a very sophisticated statistical inference, statistical process in math, no?
Mm-hmm.
While the creation that human beings has that emulates God's image into them, it's something new, something that you can see with the eyes, but you can feel it in your soul, no?
Yeah.
And I think that this is a very important word, no? AI can generate, but only humans can create.
Yeah. When I think about, you know, I just got a CD out from, I had listened to this artist for a while, but I got a CD out a few weeks ago, a singer, his name is Bobby McFerrin, and he uses his voice for all of his instruments. And so he has, you know, all these percussions and different noises, but his music is, it's beautiful and it's complicated, but it's all his voice. And I cannot see a computer creating something like that out of nothing.
Yeah.
Where he's like, you know what? What can I do with my voice? That creation of something new. I mean, that's why we love different artists, because here is someone that is unique.
Yes.
And it's not like everything else. And so I want to, we're drawn to artists, whether musicians or painters or sculptors, that have something that is uniquely them. And you can, you know, my wife plays a game on her phone. Well, she used to play this game on her phone called Artle. And so mm-hmm. it would show her all these different paintings and she would have to guess the artist. And, you know, she has an eye for painters. So she can mm-hmm. see a painting, even if she hasn't seen that painting, she can look at it and say, oh, that's a Van Gogh. That's a Monet. And just because of the way it's done, she's like, oh, I know this artist. And I can see it. You know, I can, you know, you can hear a song and you're like, oh, you know what? I haven't heard that song before, but it sounds like that's Billy Joel, you know?
Yeah.
And because that person had their own signature, their own thing that they have added to their art. And
yeah, that's true, because
AI can't do that.
Yeah, because God gave us a unique soul. We are unique. Each person of us is unique. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like how you are ending this one, my brother.
I'm excited to continue this conversation. And so I want to ask anyone out there listening, I encourage you to go to thatnerdycatholic.com/AI. We are putting up all of our episodes of the series on that page, but you can also find a form to send in any thoughts that you have, any questions, any resources you would like us to look at, any topics you want us to cover. Go over to thatnerdycatholic.com/AI and send us your thoughts. We want you to be part of this conversation. We are going to be going deeper into some of the ethical questions as well as some of the metaphysical questions, you know, philosophical questions about artificial intelligence. But we want you to be part of this conversation. If you go over to thatnerdycatholic.com, you can sign up for an email list to get updates on the new episodes we're putting out and anything else that's going on in the nerdy universe. You can head over to thatnerdycatholic.com/merch to get some cool nerdy swag. And you can head over to thatnerdycatholic.com/support to support us financially. We appreciate any support you can give. But I want to encourage you to come back next time and continue to be part of this conversation. Cesar, thank you so much for joining me again today.
Thank you, Seth, for this opportunity. And we'll See you in the next episode.
All right. See you in the next episode. All right. God bless.
God bless.
Bye.
System shut down.